Hello and welcome to the Beacon Group's Noon Step Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Jackie and I am an alcoholic. In an effort to lessen distractions to others and to respect our speakers, you will not be able to unmute yourself during this meeting. Let's start this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and all are welcome to attend, but we ask that only alcoholics participate. If you are new to AA or new to the Beacon Group, we strongly recommend home group membership and sponsorship. If you are new or not so new and looking for a sponsor, please put your name and number in the chat. If you have worked all 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, have had a spiritual experience, and are willing to sponsor, please also put your name and number in the chat. The chat will remain open during the meeting, except while the speaker is sharing. Also in the chat, you will find our AA quote of the day. The quote source will always be from our AA literature. Our speaker will share for 30 minutes on the step of the day, and then we will split into breakout rooms for small group discussions. Each group has a moderator who will divide the time equally and invite each person to share. Questions are encouraged during the sharing part of the meeting. When you share, please be sure your environment is quiet and free of distractions. Breakout room discussions end at 12:54. Followed by day counts, announcements, and the Lord's Prayer. And I have asked Lee to read the 12 steps. Thanks, Lee.
Hi, I'm Lee, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to read the 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you so much, Lee. Appreciate that. Today, we're going to hear a talk on step 10. And step 10 is continued to take personal inventory. And when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Please give a warm welcome to Leslie S. from Atlanta, Georgia. Thank you so much, Leslie, for being here. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. And I'd like to thank everybody that's in the squares that's here to hear whatever message Spirit puts into me. My name is Leslie S. I'm a recovering alcoholic. I am sober for 34 years, November 2nd, 1988. I'm broadcasting from Atlanta, Georgia. My original home is Los Angeles, California, where I hit my bottom and I got transformed into a different person. again, I appreciate everyone for coming in here. I'm going to speak on the 10th step from my experience, strength, and hope. Filter in and pepper in a little bit of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and possibly parts of the 12 and 12, because that's how I was raised. I'm going to share a little bit to qualify. I usually never use that word, but to qualify as being an alcoholic. I came into the rooms at 28 years old, and I wasn't necessarily an alcoholic, I didn't think. I thought there was some other things wrong with me, and I hit a surrendered bottom one night when I just took a drink and did some other stuff, and nothing happened, nothing worked. And I didn't know that was my final day, November 1st. I didn't know that was going to be my last day of drinking. I thought it was going to be again and again and again, but there was something that came from within. And it didn't necessarily, as I understand today, come from my head. It came from somewhere deep down in the solar plexus, in the gut, in the heart space that says, go home. And that was literally what I heard, was go home. Now, I don't remember, I don't know about a lot of you, but I don't remember everything. I have big gaps in my brain of certain things that I've done throughout my sobriety, certain things I've done throughout my disease, active addiction to alcohol. And I think God uses that as a protective measure, because if I remembered everything, I probably wouldn't be here right now. But I do remember key things that have transformed me, key events, key spiritual awakenings, spiritual experiences, and I want to share them here with you. I went through the steps many, many, many times in this, because in this is this walk. I'm an alcoholic of the nature where if I take a drink, then I need something else so I can drink more. I didn't think drinking was my issue. Like I said in the beginning, I just thought that I was partying. It started out as a party. It started out at 28 years old, you got a job, you're living alone, you live a couple miles from your mom's house, you're grown, you work for the phone company. At the time, it was Pacific Bell in Los Angeles. I had been there for 8 years when I came into recovery. I had the job, I had braces on my teeth. And I say that because, you know, well, how many alcoholics take care of their teeth? Well, I really didn't. I just had the braces on there, didn't get adjustments, had back teeth. To this day, I got back teeth missing right now because I had probably had so much other stuff deposited in there, probably killed all my bones. I don't know. But I know that I wasn't taking care of myself. My brag and my power was I came in with a job, I came in with a car, I came in with my own apartment. But truth be told, and it was revealed to me later, I came in with a car that had not been registered in over 5 years. That, of course, made me drive forward and stay in my rearview mirror. I don't know about any of y'all, but when you're out of order, you don't have your license is not correct, you don't have insurance, and you haven't registered your car, you have a tendency to drive from the back seat or looking out the back window. That was my thing, you know? And then I also had to be doubly careful because I'm a girl that goes out for happy hour, and happy hour started out like maybe ladies' night on Wednesday, and it ended Sunday night in a depression in a fetal position, because alcohol is a depressant. I don't know about you, but after I got finished drinking, I cried. I'm a crying alcoholic. I'm not a fighting alcoholic. I'm not the giggly alcoholic. I'm the one that has the blues and wants to hear nothing but Eartha Kitt and Aretha Franklin and want to cry about all the men who left me. All right, you know, I just go into a dark, dark place. And my drinking was just insidious. You know, it was trying everything. Okay, I'm not going to drink dark liquor because dark liquor is, I didn't like the taste of it. And then I tried white Russians and I tried black Russians, the men. Anyway, I tried everything. I tried Long Island iced teas. I went from wine to beer. Okay, I partied too hard the week before. Now I'm going to start drinking beer. And it just was going over and over again. By this time, I'm 28. And when you're 28, you feel like you're coming up on 30. I'm getting old. I'm 62 now. Little did I know. I'm getting old. I need to get myself together, you know, and all of that. So I surrendered to this. I was surrendered. And I walked in through the bridge, walk across the bridge of faith to the bridge of surrender. And I had known I was surrendered. I didn't know. And when I came into the rooms, I came in off the street, went to an outpatient program because the job, the employee assistance program, EAP, said, hey, you know, if you got a problem, we won't tell nobody. And it was before HIPAA. So we go in there and you got the union behind you. And I went in there and they sent me to outpatient. And from outpatient, I sat there and took everybody's inventory in the room as a newcomer should do. Long story short, the first message I got when I came into the rooms was, "Hi, how are you?" And everybody identified themselves as an alcoholic. And they told these deep stories that you would never tell. In my head, you never tell these stories. What are you doing? But everybody seemed free. And they had a glow about them. Their eyes were white, their smiles, we laughed. And I liked the fact that they greeted me. The fellowship just embraced me immediately. And I started going, and then I started following these groups of people. Where are you going? Well, what do you do tomorrow? And you guys are so beautiful because you just volunteer. Well, there's a good meeting over here. And I just followed the crowd. And if you went to coffee or you went to IHOP afterwards, I followed the crowd. But one of the most important things I had to do is get a sponsor. Because I heard that if you don't have a sponsor, if you don't work the steps, if you don't stay close to this program, you're going to relapse. And all I knew was relapse was to die. That's what I thought. That's what, if I take one more drink, I'm going to die. I didn't ever want to test the water. So for me, it was grace and cooperation, because this is a partnership, friends. It's a partnership with the fellowship until you can get an embracing understanding with the power of your choice. And I needed guidance to that. I needed nurturing and launching and pushing and encouragement. And that's what you guys gave me. So by going through the steps and going through the process, I get through the 4 through 9. And over the years, I started practicing these principles in most of my affairs, not all, because I wasn't willing. I'm the 6 and 7 girl in the 12, and 12 is like, I'm not ready to let go of this one yet. It feels too good. I like how it makes me feel when I talk about people, because see, I think I'm pretty funny. And some of my jokes are kind of cruel, even today. So I think it's funny. I'm not ready to go let go of criticism and point fingers and she's crazy and he's crazy. But we're all sitting in the same floor in the mental ward. You know, I have the unmitigated gall to have an ego that likes to feel better than. Alcoholism to me is I separate me. I, self, and me. The isms is what I ended up learning later on that I was going to deal with for the rest of my life. This is a design for living, they told me. But what happens is eventually, if you keep doing the steps as I did, the numbers fall off and it becomes a way of being. It becomes a way of being. Because what this program did for me is it set up a pattern. It set up a blueprint on how to look at myself, look at my faults, look at the areas that are most impacting me and other people and my connection with the spirit. And to help me to navigate through the speed bumps of life. See, I don't know how to live without a substance, because at first the substance worked. Alcohol worked wonderful. I could forget about yesterday's woes. I could forget about tomorrow's fears. I could forget about what you did and said to me. I could even forget about what I did and said to you. But there came a time where the alcohol, I shed that skin and I had to grow new skin, which meant I needed to grow up in all areas of my life. Now, when you go through 4 through 9, there comes, they give you this wonderful pattern on how to produce a spiritual experience if you follow these steps. And I got with my sponsor, and I've had like 2 major sponsors in my whole life with a couple sprinkled in, but I was with Betty T for 26 years. I'm back with my original sponsor, Brenda M, who's in Los Angeles right now. And we have the tightest, closest mother, sister, friend relationship that I could ever develop with anyone. You know, and she knows where all the bodies are buried. She knows where all the shrapnel is. She knows where all the DNA is buried and all of that. That was the freeing impact of the fifth step. I felt comfortable in giving it. See, I was so ready to look like some of you who look like you were free. You know, I'm going to say this, the third step, because I can't just jump into 10, but stay with me for a minute. The third step says, turned my will and my life over to the care. Now, I was almost 5 years sober when I discovered what that really meant. What I'm turning over is my thinking, which is my will, and my actions, which is my life, over to the care of my sponsor initially. Now, I recovered from Catholicism. And no offense to anybody who's practicing Catholicism or any religion, But for me, the rules and regulations in Catholic school was so confining and so, oh my God, rigid that it seemed like I just suffered from eternal imperfection and eternal sin, quote unquote. But what you guys did and what Bill did is he took sin and turned it into defects. And that made it more digestible to me when you said defects. Whenever they say the seven deadly sins, I still get a little twang of, ooh, you know, it reminds me of Catholicism and the pomp and circumstances and the rules and regulations of this whole God thing. But what you guys did is you gave me ability, Connor, to change that and get a God of my understanding coupled with the principles of the steps. So in the third step prayer, it told me that I'm going to turn my thinking and my actions over to the care of my sponsor. For me, that's what I did. So she takes me through and she shows me things about myself that I'm going to be fighting with the rest of my life. And those are my defects and shortcomings. Then you guys turn around and tear me up and tell me I'm going to be fighting the internal spiritual warfare inside my soul. I suffer from a spiritual disease, a soul sickness that's so deep. It may have been something that was nature. It may be nurture. It may be in my DNA. I don't know. But the ego and my thinking are always going to be with me the rest of my life. So once I went through these steps and I started seeing some things and I started going through the ninth step, I'm fast forwarding a little bit because I don't have a lot of time, but I started going through little by little, getting rid of the things blocking me because I found out that I was blocked in a two-way fashion. I'm not only blocked by the Most High or whatever the universe, whatever you want to call it. I have several names, the divine immersion, the source, the power, the nameless one, that which has no name, it, something, whatever it is that stopped me on November 1st and got me sober on November 2nd, I have developed a relationship to respect whatever that is, whatever grows this plant right here. I don't know what that is, but I know if I water it and I nurture it, it will grow. That is what you guys are. But these steps are almost like fertilizer. This just came to me. The steps are like fertilizer. It don't smell good when you spread it out on the ground, but you know it's going to help whatever you fertilize grow. And I needed a whole lot of fertilizing and weeding. I needed to be pruned. I needed to be cut back. I needed to be what we call humbled to my lowest common denominator. And once I'm humbled, there's something in my soul that develops a relationship with this energy, this source, this power, and with my sponsor. Okay, so once I do the ninth step, so you say, okay, once you get through these steps, then how do you stay from getting drunk? Well, I don't really have the true answer because let me tell you what I've discovered. I've discovered that this is a miracle. I've discovered miracles, phenomenons, grace, mercy. We try as best we can, spiritual experiences, spiritual aha moments, God winks, whatever you want to call it. We try the best we can in our finite humanness to explain the power in our lives. That's why we tell stories and we tell where we came from and where we've been transformed to and who we are today, as opposed to, well, I'm not 34 years, thank God I'm not the same girl I was in the first 10, the first 20, because I was still a hot mess. I'm still a hot mess today. I just dress it up today. Hello. Don't judge me. So that's what I do. That's what I do today. So in the 10th step, I didn't even know about that. I was so busy on 4 through 9 for so many decades. I wasn't looking at 10. Let's talk about what's real. 10 step talks about continue to take an inventory and look at myself all the time, most of the time, to see where I could have done better. Where could see, history will repeat itself if you don't look at it. There's a leveling of our pride. The big book said, don't nobody like to feel leveled, their pride to be leveled. I mean, the world and my mother taught me, have pride about yourself. Feel good about yourself. Hold your head up. Pick yourself up by your bootstrap. Well, for me in this spiritual walk, I need to lessen Leslie because I'm full of selfishness and self-centeredness, and I need to increase God. Now, once I get that first nudge or that first series of experiences and the ninth step promises start coming even more and more fruition, they start coming up, the maintenance is in the 10th step. Now, I know there's going to be people say, no, that's 11th step. When you do the, were we selfish? Were we angry? I don't care what step you call it. I'm not getting into the weeds of that. I'm not getting into some of y'all big book aficionados will say, no, that's not a 10th. That's an 11th step. Look in the book where it, I don't care where it is. Just do it. I don't have time to debate. I don't have to fight with my God about my God. I don't have to fight about the process that I take as long as I take it. And what the 10th step does, I'm supposed to promptly admit stuff. Let me tell you a real quick story. I'm not real prompt at doing the 10th step. I have sponsees up the yin yang, and they're so diligent. They make me feel shame of myself. They send me a nightly review, and they review themselves. And I always tell my sponsees, send it to me. But this is, I'm not here to grade your paper for the day. How well you treated the boss, the kids. I'm not here to do that. This is something that you, by the time you get to 10th step, this is an examination of yourself. And it's something magical and mystical about putting it in writing. And then when you share it with somebody else, and then they can see it. Because for me, the 10th step, when I share a 10th step with someone else, it's just like not being able to see my ears. Now, Dave, I don't know about you, and you're kind of squinching up at the camera, Dave P, but, you know, you wear glasses, but I don't know if Dave know how to look, Dave done got it, look, he moving. Dave, I don't know if you can see your ears except when you're looking in the camera, but I know if you ain't got no mirror, no camera, I don't think Dave can see his ears because your eyes look like they right about here. I need somebody to say, Leslie, your earring is missing. Leslie, so that's the same thing a 10th step is for me. It's for somebody to help me see my ears. And if it's difficult enough, I have to call my sponsor and read it. Now, I'm not one of those girls, like some of my sponsees. I'm not doing a 10th step every night. Just recently, and I just did a 5th step. Let me explain the difference between a 10th and a 5th. From my perspective, you don't have to agree. But for me, sometimes I sit on a 10th so long it becomes a 4th. Anybody ever have that experience? I'm not writing nothing. I'm still hot. I'm still angry. Screw them. I'm not doing none of that. Nope, I don't feel like it. Because I like justified anger. It's cozy. It's comfortable. I like self-righteous indignation. Look at what he did to me. I am a psychopath on the spectrum. A psychopath is just a person that don't want to admit and can't see or can't see his or her part. Well, I qualify. Now, I might not be John Wayne Gacy, and I might not be Ted Bundy with bodies under the bed and under the house, but I do know that I have psychopathic tendencies because I'm in denial, especially when I'm right. So this recent incident between my ex-husband and my son, he did something egregious to me, to my son. I was hot for 4 days. I was hot. I must have said everything I can't say on this camera right now. I went into his ancestry.com. I talked about his mom. I went, see, I don't know about you, but when I get angry, it's like taking a drink, Larry Betts. I black out. I don't know what's going to come out my mouth. I can't fight, so I'm real good on camera. And baby, this thing right here called the cell phone is the devil. I can pencil with you to the 19th power. I have a vernacular that's wonderful. I can cuss at you without cussing. You'd rather me cuss. You know what I'm saying? That's how bad my defects are. Now, so I talked to my sponsor. Let me give you this thing about my 10th step. I talked to my sponsor, and she was like, she's very zen. She says, well, sweetheart, let's just get together. Let's put a date on how long you can stay angry, and then you have to start doing the sick man's prayer for him. I'm doing that. Now, I never am objectionable. I'm not ready for that right now. He pulled a gun on my son. Do you understand? My son is a great kid. He doesn't deserve that. Never been African-American kid, 23 years old, never been to jail, never been in handcuffs, never got a speeding ticket. Great kid. And you're going to do what? Because your ego was what? And you in the program and you know better? And then you rationalize and justify with me? I'm mom. You're talking to me. So that was the story. So I was hot as fish grease. Yes, I said that. So I told my sponsor, I'm not ready yet. I'm not. In those instances, I know for a fact it is grace that keeps me from getting drunk. So, you know, some people say things like, well, I wasn't thinking about it. It wasn't about drinking. Everything's about drinking for me. Even the slightest offense is about drinking. I can't pretend that 34 years gave me a card to go and lose my damn mind. So for 4 days, I was hot. But because I've gone through the steps over and over again, that's gotten me in contact in my soul with a power greater than me. Something, it's not guilt, it's not shame, it's not remorse. It's something called a God consciousness. Now I have a God consciousness now that tells me, you know, that's not cool. And it's not coming from my ego, because my ego applauds that. My ego wants me uncomfortable. My ego wants me hot. My ego wants me to act out on greed and gluttony and lust and envy. My ego loves fear. Fear, my ego, and mine are the mean triplets. My thinking, fear, and ego, they go together. They in a threesome. No offense. So, you know, they go together and they always catch me at the right, wrong time. And I jump in there and it becomes a foursome. I come to understand that the life well lived, the wisest life, the fifth step in the 12 and 12 says, highly spiritually developed people insist on being sponsored. I'm paraphrasing. They insist on having an advisor. They insist on running things past. I insist because I know a part, even though I got a guide and I work the steps and I got sponsees and I try to work this thing and walk this thing, but I know at any given moment I can make a left turn in my brain and become a newcomer in my actions. So the 10th step is the maintenance step. So eventually the story goes like this. It took me about 4 days. And I was able to at least walk and say a prayer for that man. And slowly, ever so slowly, I became more and more willing to pray for him on a regular. See, I have a spiritual toolbox full of ideas and suggestions from you guys. And sometimes I forget what tools. I don't need a pipe wrench when I need a screwdriver. Need a hammer when I need just a mallet. So one of the tools I used was I can at least pray for him, but I'm still hot. And what that grew into, because I didn't do a 10th step checking it right then and there, I just was not willing. That's, I hadn't surrendered to his sickness or whatever it is his stuff. It became my stuff. So what do? I do a reverse third. I take back my thinking and actions consciously, on purpose. God who? So I eventually ended up having to do a fourth step, which consisted of a resentment inventory, all four columns, a fear inventory, all four columns, and a sex conduct inventory, the entire list of those, because they're just questions in my intimate relationship character. Did I have sex with my ex-husband? Absolutely not. But where was I? Where did I cause jealousy, suspicion, and bitterness? What should I have done instead? That what should I have done instead is the key for me that lets me know I do have a God consciousness, because I know better. I just can't do better without the power and the willingness. Now, let me tell you about a 10th step for me. My nightly review goes like this. I contemplate the day that's gone past. And I use the easiness that my sponsor tells me. It's not in the big book. Don't go looking for it. Don't tell your sponsor I told you it was. Don't do it, because I will come find you. That's not what I said. What I am saying here, she said, baby, if you get an 80% good day and 20% was iffy, you batting 1,000. Just that simple. If you get a 50-50 day and you didn't drink and stab nobody, you didn't go to jail, you doing good. Now let's flip that upside down, the ratios. How if you go a 10% day, the day was 10% good and 90% was just raggedy, whether it was self-imposed, the man in the traffic, the UPS man, the crazy people down the street, 90%, the kids got on your nerves, your sponsees calling you drunk. Oh, I get a lot of them. Drunk calling you, cussing you out because they relapsed and what you should have did for them. I just got two in a row yesterday. I must be the magnet for drunk people. I think when everybody get drunk, they think, come on, Leslie. Let's do a reverse 10 step and tell her about herself. And I just sit on the phone saying, see. That's that word when you ain't got nothing else to just see. So, and so what happens is I sit here and I think about what was in the day that I could have done better. God saved me. Thank you. I don't ask God for anything anymore today. I got 4 minutes. I don't ask him for anything because I don't need anything. See, I've come to understand what my relationship with God in the 10th step is. Whatever I give the universe and its people, the universe bouncing back off of me. So if I say, oh, I want some money. How am I going to get some money? The universe say, I don't know. How am I going to get some money? Let's take another example. Oh, I want a man. I'm all y'all single people. I see you, sexy Debbie. Anyway, I want a man, and he got to be, you know what I'm saying? Well, you got to be so-and-so and such-and-such. You got to have the job and the car and all that. So whatever I put, so if I flip that and I say, I want nothing for me, what can I do to serve you most high and your people? The universe guarantees and goes back and says, hey, how can I serve you, Leslie, so that you can serve my people? That's how I think. Because my sponsor has given me other ways. The book is meant to be suggestive only. There's so many variables, and we're creative people. So many ways to look at this thing called recovery, because I want to live ultimately in unison with my brothers and in unison with the universe. See, the third step for me is the step that is the thread. Like they said, fear is the thread, the corroding thread. Well, I reversed that in my quiet time, in my thoughts and meditation and prayer. And I reversed it and I said, you know what? The third step is the thread through every step. Let me tell you what that looks like. If I'm turning my thinking and my action over to the care of God, that is so that I can be carefree. Let me say that again in the back. That was one of my quiet time. It was one of them creative thoughts. I said, I turn it over to God so I don't have to care for my child who lives in Los Angeles, an African-American boy who lives in South Central, who's not gang affiliated. Terrified every day. But I turn it over every time I think about him. Every time the dark ego and the mind tells me, oh, you know we're going to be. No. I stop the thinking with God's help and I say, God, what is it you would have for him? I turn you over to the care of him. In fact, if you have a resentment, I would suggest for you, for your consideration, is take a third step prayer with that prayer. God, I offer John to you to build with him and to do with him as you will. If you've got children, if you've got family, if you've got friends, put their name in. Stop praying for you. I even pray selfishly in my prayer, so I really have to be careful what I do. When I look at my 10th step at night, if I don't fix it right away, I ask God to show me because I may not see it. And I also, more importantly, call my sponsor and run my day, if it was a difficult day, past her so she can help me see my ears, friend. She can point out those things that are right here in her face that I can't see. My sponsor is the power plugged into the power when I am powerless. Okay. Because I don't always have all the power all the time. Right? So the end of the story with the father was this. I walked away from that fourth step with a forgiving heart. She gave me an exercise, and I'm going to wrap it up with this on 10 step. I got 36 seconds. She gave me 19 seconds. She gave me an exercise. She said, put your hand on your heart, Leslie. I was like, everybody on the sound of my voice, put your hand over your heart. Just practice this. It sounds corny. It looks goofy, but that's okay. We don't care. And she said, repeat after me. And in your silence, repeat after me. She said, God, I'd like to thank you for this experience. For all of my defects, for this person, in my life. I love you. Picture the person's faith. I forgive you. I hope all is well with you. I pray that you have everything I want and then some. I forgive you. I love you. And thank you for helping me be a better person. And so it is. Now, that's not in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. But guess what? I cried like a baby. I cried like a baby. This was Tuesday, Monday night. So 10th step is the maintenance. You can't get a Ferrari and drive it all over the place wondering why the engine fell out and the tires went flat when you ain't did the maintenance. Don't buy a car, a Range Rover, a Mercedes, a Tesla, if you can't take it and get the maintenance on it. Because the maintenance is the key to keeping the car. That's the same thing with my spirit, my soul, my body, my mind. If I don't maintain this connection with God and with you, I'm going to go flat. And you're going to end up seeing me in the junkyard. My name is Leslie Strange, and I'm a recovering alcoholic. I appreciate you so much. Thank you.